Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Tuesday, the 29th of October. Coming up today, we'll have the outcome of an inquest into the death of a husband and wife who were found dead in their sandwich home in July. We'll also have the details of a film production crew who've been forced to issue an apology to Kent villagers. But first, taking a look at our top story today, data has revealed the most difficult secondary schools to get a place at in Kent and why. It comes as there are concerns about some comprehensives being oversubscribed. Reporter James Pallant has been following this story for the Kent Online podcast. He's with me now. James, the figures make for really interesting reading. What schools in Kent have been revealed as the hardest to get into?
Our investigation ranked every secondary school in Kent and Medway by the percentage of first choice applicants they rejected. Of the 10 schools who turned away the highest proportion of pupils who chose them top, 7 are grammar schools in the west or northwest of the county. Dartford Grammar School came top in our ranking, accepting barely 1 in 5 boys who put it top of their preference form. Dartford Grammar School for Girls and Wilmington Grammar School for Boys came second and third, followed by the School of Science and Technology Maidstone and Brompton Academy in Gillingham.
Right, and why are some of the schools oversubscribed?
We found grammar schools on the edge of Kent are particularly prone to be oversubscribed for two reasons. Firstly, grammar schools tend to be the best performing schools academically, making them highly desirable. But grammars in Dartford, Tonbridge or Tonbridge Wells are particularly selective because in these areas, Kent pupils compete with youngsters applying from London, Essex or Sussex. But it's not just grammar schools that are tough to get into. Take the School of Science and Technology Maidstone, for example. That's a non-selective school that's only been open a few years, but quickly it has gained a strong reputation, especially after receiving an outstanding Ofsted rating. Last year, it received almost 1,000 more applications than it had places.
Looking ahead, what would be some potential solutions?
I spoke with Mandeep Sherjan, whose son was last year rejected from every grammar school he applied to, despite having passed the 11+ test. He believes more grammar schools should be opened across Kent to meet the demand, but current legislation prevents this. As far as non-selective schools go, I think it's a matter of increasing the quality of schools generally so that families have more good options to choose from. There are a variety of ways that pupils are selected for admission. Some choose pupils based on where they live, what church they go to, what their test scores are, or if their siblings attend the school. But education expert Peter Reed told me the problem is, no matter what criteria one uses, there will always be pupils who are rejected and feel that the system is unfair.
Thanks so much, James.
Kent Online News.
An inquest into the deaths of a couple in Sandwich has found the pair died in a double tragedy. It was concluded 91-year-old Dillis Richards took a lethal dose of poison before her 93-year-old husband Brian shot himself. They were found dead at their home called The Butchery in July. Police say there was no evidence a third party was involved and it's not being treated as suspicious. Abby Hook from KMTV has been speaking to reporter Oliver Leader de Sachs, who's been covering the case.
The inquest began in August but was adjourned until today. And like all inquests, Coroner Catherine Woods didn't attribute blame, but rather outlined the facts surrounding their deaths. And in today's case, which was quite complex, Brian Richards' death was concluded to be suicide due to him writing several notes that showed intent. Well, Dillis's was given something called a narrative conclusion.
And can you tell us a bit more about Brian and Dillis? What were they like? Who were they?
Well, we don't really know much about their mindset at the time of their deaths, but we do know the pair, both in their 90s, had lived in Sandwich for more than 50 years, with Brian once being a practicing GP and then being married for nearly 70 years. They say they appeared to be very much in love, soulmates. They used to do crosswords together. And it was in recent years that Dillis and Brian had become frustrated with their declining health, the former being housebound and needing a carer. And it was just a few days before her death, in fact, that she texted her daughter saying, "Never forget, I love you."
The family have issued a statement requesting peace and privacy.
Kent Online News.
A Dover man has been sent to prison after he took a knife and an imitation firearm on a night out. Police were called to Harbour Parade in Ramsgate in May after Kane Morley was seen making threats. The 24-year-old, who lives in Folkestone Road, has been locked up for 14 months. Tommy Robinson's been jailed for 18 months after repeating false allegations about a Syrian refugee schoolboy. The far-right activist has admitted breaching an injunction made after he was sued in 2021. The 41-year-old, whose real name is Stephen Yaxley Lennon, handed himself into police in Folkestone on Friday. Sky's Martin Brunt has been reading a statement from his lawyer.
He passionately believes in free speech, freedom of the press, and his overwhelming desire is to expose the truth. He believes the public has the right to know all the truth, not just that provided by the mainstream media.
Bosses in Canterbury have confirmed plans to increase prices at some of their most expensive car parks, despite calls for them to be cut. It would see the hourly rate for the Band 1 sites rise to £3.80 an hour. North Lane and Castle Row would also be on the highest tariff. Local businesses say the high prices are driving down trade. There's anger as quad bikes have damaged a brand new football pitch in Medway. Volunteers spent more than a year preparing St James's playing fields on the Isle of Grain, with the first game due to take place this weekend. A referee will need to examine the pitch to see if it can go ahead after tyre marks were left all over the grass. The Dartford MP is calling for the Chancellor to invest more in the fight against dementia ahead of tomorrow's budget. Jim Dixon has called for more funding of essential services following his mother's own diagnosis. He says it's left his family shocked and fearing the worst.
Unbeknownst to a lot of people, dementia is actually the leading cause of death in the UK. Something like 1 million people are living with the condition. And in Kent, that's 29,000 people, very large number. And Dartford, my constituency, something like 1,400. And it costs the UK £42 billion a year to treat. And if we don't change our approach to dementia, that's going to grow to something like £90 billion in the next 15 years. And the things we really need to work on is early and accurate diagnosis, making sure we have the treatments available when people are diagnosed, and then training of the care system. In the case of my own mother, she was diagnosed about 6 years ago because she was experiencing a little bit of memory loss and behaviour in herself that was a little bit unusual. So my dad and her GP got together and decided that they would take her through the sorts of tests that you undertake in order to determine whether someone has got dementia. And she was found to have the early stages of dementia, which actually was very fortunate because they were then able to put her on the right regime of medication and sort out the care that was needed. And she's actually done very well. She's still very engaged with the world. You can hold a great conversation with her. She reads, she's engaged with her family. She does experience a little bit of low and high mood and just occasional sort of bouts of slight aggression, which are the way the dementia is manifesting itself in her. But she actually is a good example of diagnosing early in order to be able to help people to live with the condition in a way that's comfortable for them and those all around her. But it's a very different story if people are diagnosed late.
Last week, a new drug which slows the pace of Alzheimer's disease was rejected for widespread use in the NHS in England. Meanwhile, a Kent campaigner is urging the government not to increase fuel duty in tomorrow's budget. The tax on petrol and diesel was frozen by the Conservatives, but there's speculation Labour could increase it as they look to plug a massive financial black hole. Howard Cox is from Fair Fuel UK. He says it'll hit working people the hardest.
I'd like to see fuel duty reduced by 20p. That will never happen. So I'm not that stupid. But what should happen is at least we should get a freeze in duty. And there's real chance that I'm hearing it's going to be about 7p increase in fuel duty. With the VAT also on that, the immoral VAT on a tax, it's going to be 8p. So for the average driver, family car, which is about a 50-litre, 55-litre, you're looking at well over £4 extra to fill up. Quite honestly, I'm not optimistic about any of the things that we drivers want. It's good news is more and more Labour MPs are beginning to show, saying, don't put it up. This is hitting the working man or the working woman.
And the increase that you mentioned, that 7p, I mean, an extra, £4 to fill up, what kind of impact is that going to have on people, especially people who might need their vehicle for work or maybe live in rural areas and do a lot of driving?
Well, you said it very much so. The policies are made up by people who live in areas where there's great public transport, i.e. in London. And I've had thousands upon thousands of emails and messages from people who say, I can't live without my car. I can't afford to buy an electric vehicle. I can't, all these sorts of things. Pensioners already, the winter fuel allowance has been dropped. Pensioners drive too, and they have to go and get shopping, go to hospitals. They go all the sorts of things. They rely, even if they don't drive, they rely on their family coming to see them. Guess what? In a car. The whole thing in terms of impact, £4 doesn't sound a lot to fill up, but over if you fill up say once a week, you're looking at £200 a year extra, and you've got to earn about 300 quid on top of that to get that £200. And the worst thing about it is the small business situation, whereby, as I say, sole traders, they've already been hit hard on a number of fronts over the year, as with corporation tax going up from 19% to 25%. And this is the interesting thing, you see, is that the fuel duty with VAT on top of it is about 60% of everything that goes into the tank goes to the government in tax. And yet, the top rate of income tax is 40%. The top rate of corporation tax is 25%. And yet, an essential resource like petrol and diesel, where people need something like 70% of the people in this country have rely on their car because public transport's so bad. They live in rural areas or, pretty, sort of countryfied suburban areas. Those sorts of places, they cannot wait 2 hours for a bus to come along, or they can't wait and carry their, or shopping from Tesco's. They can't do these sorts of things.
It comes as the boss of Britain's oldest brewer is calling for more support for the hospitality industry in the budget. Shepherd Neame, which is based in Faversham, runs more than 300 pubs across the southeast, as well as making beers. Lucy's been chatting to Chief Executive Jonathan Neame.
The hospitality industry has been on a sort of long clawback from all the challenges in the last few years. And over the summer, we reached a point of a degree of stability for the first time in 4 or 5 years. But the great challenge everyone faces is the enormous cost pressures that we face right across the board. Many businesses are the same, particularly small retailers. And so what we want to see is those cost pressures ease. And we have considerable concern in this budget that they will go up.
And could you just talk me through some of the things you're hoping to hear in the budget?
Well, pubs generally are the most overtaxed and overregulated hospitality environments in the world. We have some of the highest rates, the highest alcohol duties, and high labour costs, high additional employment costs. And if the sector is going to survive and thrive and continue to invest, we want to see all those things come down. What we're hearing at the moment is that there's great speculation that a number of those things will go up, and that is of great concern.
And I understand there's a freeze on alcohol duty at the moment, which is due to last until February next year. Is that something you would call to be extended again?
Absolutely. Yes, we want to see alcohol tax freezes continue. We also want to see the business rates relief, which has been in place for small retailers and pubs since COVID, to be extended. That's due to expire in March 25. And we are concerned about potential new taxes on employers' national insurance, which could be very material for small businesses.
Some people I've spoken to have mentioned this kind of doom and gloom attitude of this government. I mean, is that something that you would agree with in terms of, being a business owner?
Yeah, I think immediately after the election, there was a great boom in optimism, but it was very short-lived, sadly. And the recent narrative in the last few weeks have undoubtedly reduced consumer and business confidence. And that is a concern because people, the fundamentals of economics are actually improving, with interest rates coming down and real wages going up. But that should normally translate into more spend. That's not happening at the moment. People are saving, they're reining in, they're very concerned about the potential impact on them. And so whilst last year we saw a degree of resilient demand from consumers, we are concerned that that will soften if the tax take on households is too great.
Kent Online News.
A cargo ship that was stranded off the Kent coast full of potentially explosive material has finally left. The Ruby is carrying 200,000 tonnes of ammonium nitrate from Russia but suffered damage after leaving port. It was anchored off Margate for several weeks but has now been taken to a dry dock in Norfolk for repairs. Film crews have issued an apology to villagers near Hythe after production vehicles caused parking chaos. Lim Castle is being used to shoot a new comedy but crews have been taking up spaces on a private road and in the village hall car park. After a number of complaints from local villagers, the company have issued an apology. It's being blamed on a miscommunication about boundaries. Filming will wrap up tomorrow. There's growing support for a campaign in Kent to stop children under the age of 14 from owning a phone. The Smartphone Free Childhood campaign is a national initiative aiming to stop children being exposed to harmful online content. They say parents, schools and community groups can step in until the government take action. More than 2,000 parents in Kent have already signed up to the pledge, which will stop children owning a smartphone before the age of 14. Lindsay Meaden is a trauma therapist and mental health advocate from Tunbridge Wells. She's been speaking to reporter Lauren Abbott.
My background, I actually work in mental health, and we see in our clinic in Tunbridge Wells, we get young adults coming in who have been traumatised by some of the things they see on their phone, where they've got addictive behaviours, where their anxiety has increased, depression, yeah, self-harm, suicidal feelings. There's a whole range of issues that are coming through. And it's incredibly frustrating when this is happening. It's so obvious. You don't have to work in mental health to see the impact this is having on children. And so for me personally, and obviously in my profession as well, it's about us standing up, speaking up for our children and being the voice to ensure they get their childhood back, because childhood is such a short window. It really does go fast for every child. And I think we are the ones, we as parents, teachers, professionals, we have to stand up and say, no, this has got to stop. We have got to protect our children. Smartphones, the way they're designed to be addictive. They are designed to keep you scrolling. They are constantly giving you all that dopamine of interaction and got to keep looking. That's adults. We've got the brains that can deal with it. But even adults, we're struggling. I'm guilty now of saying, right, that's it. Putting my phone out of my room at night, having Sundays, smartphone-free Sundays. So even I'm reducing my time on my smartphone. But for children, we have to protect them. Their brains are not developed enough. We cannot allow them to get addicted to these devices. There are plenty of alternatives. So the argument of not being able to keep in touch with your child to and from school, there's no argument there. There are plenty of alternative phones. And I think we need to just emphasise that schools need to work with parents, because there's so much pressure on parents.
Yeah.
And we need to say, especially primary schools, zero phones. Not just handing them in at reception and then taking them out. It's got to be
so zero. Not have them in at all.
No, my personal, and Felicity's agreeing. Yeah, so many parents agree. You don't need at primary school to be even bringing it onto site. If they need a little tiny phone in their pocket just to text their mum or dad, or okay, but that's down to them. But I think all primary schools should say no phones on site. When they go to secondary school, that's another issue. Again, use alternative phones, but not smartphones.
The group say most children in the UK own a phone by the age of 11.
Kent Online News.
Plans have been put forward to redevelop an old motorcycle shop in Deal. Four retail units could be built on the former Hutchings site in South Street. Proposals also include 11 new homes, which residents have raised concerns about. A housing estate near Canterbury is finally getting its own shop after 5 years of waiting. Work to build 750 homes at Saxon Fields started in 2019, and residents have been calling for a convenience store, with the closest currently nearly a mile away. It's now been confirmed a Morrison's local is going to be built in Fairbrass Way. Three people have been rescued after their yacht ran aground near Deal yesterday morning. At Kent Online, you can see footage of the vessel, which was taking on water at Goodwin Sands just before 7 a.m. The RNLI responded. Those on board were given health checks, but there's been no reports of serious injury. Now, one of Kent's biggest employers is investing £220 million into a site in Medway. BAE Systems designs and makes aerospace technology. The company's decided to completely rebuild their facility in Rochester. Our reporter Member Joe Crossley has been chatting to Dave Banks, who's the site director.
We're really delighted to say that our company's just approved a significant investment to rebuild the entire facility here at Rochester. It's about a £220 million investment that we're making here. And that's really on the strength of the business and the outlook we see for the operation here at Rochester.
And what will it mean for the local area, that investment?
It'd be a significant investment for the local area. So we're already creating a huge number of jobs here on the site. We've grown from a number of about 1,250 jobs just a few years back to over 1,600, near sort of 1,800, I think, by the end of this year. And we're planning to get up to about 2,100 jobs on the site here, all high-value jobs as well here at Rochester.
Brilliant. And what sort of jobs are they?
A whole range of things, really. I mean, obviously, the foundation of the business is our engineering capability, but we have our own operations team here who build the equipment. We've got our own finance and commercial and HR and procurement teams as well. So a whole range of experiences that people can have with us.
And what sort of things do you guys make and where do they go?
The business has been really founded on, say, high integrity controls. So primary flight controls, the electronic fly-by-wire systems that sit at the heart of an aircraft, but also head-up displays that pilots look through for situational awareness and weapon systems and things like helmet-mounted displays as well. So.
And there's going to be a bit of work done on the site itself. Can you talk me through that?
Lots of work done on the site here. So effectively what we're doing is building a brand new factory on our back car park here. We're going to demolish the current buildings and also update those at the same time. So virtually every building on the site here is going to be modernised through the next 5 years. We're just really delighted that the company's seen confidence in the future of the business here and in Medway to make such a significant investment, and really delighted to be working with the local council on all of that as well.
Building work is due to start in the new year. You can see pictures of what it'll look like at Kent Online. Elsewhere, there are plans to install a Christmas grotto at Bluewater. Bosses have applied to Dartford Council for permission and also want to keep their festive ice rink for another 5 years. Even if it's approved, the grotto won't be open this year as it'll take time to build. A new play park is going to be built in Ashford Town Centre. £150,000 is being spent on the train-themed playground near the bandstand outside B&M. And one lucky lotto player from Kent has won £1 million. The mystery man wishes to remain anonymous and is known only as Mr. P. He says he plans to go on holiday.
Kent Online Sports.
Briefly taking a look at football, Kent's Alessia Russo is in the England squad as they take on South Africa later. The Lionesses will be looking to bounce back from a 4-3 defeat to Germany at Wembley last Friday. Tonight's international friendly in Coventry kicks off at 7:45. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.